no dowry but myself. But I promise I can be a good wife. I can cook and ward and keep your home.
I want no dowry. Only you.
Rena hid the necklace in her apron pocket and was obedient the rest of the day and night, giving her father no reason to doubt her. It was true that she had nothing to pack, but she went to each of her friends, the animals, to whisper her goodbyes. She cried over Miss Scratch, lamenting the kittens she would never see.
You'll be Mrs. Scratch when the kits come, even if that good-for-nothing tabby don't help you care for him.
She scanned the animals in the room, spotting the likely sire.
You take care of your kits, or I'll come back and throw you in the water trough.
She lay awake all night as Harl snored beside her, and before the first crack of light came through the shutters, she had porridge on the fire and was out collecting eggs from the coop in the barn. She went about the rest of her chores that morning, aware that she was performing each for the last time, and, as she worked, she kept casting eyes up the road. She didn't have to wait long. Kobe came around the bend in the road, sweaty and breathless.
Oh, galloped all the way. I couldn't wait to see you.
Pinecone needed a rest, so Kobe tethered her behind the barn while Rena drew water from the well. The mare drank greedily and began grazing while they fell into each other's arms. Before long, she was bent over against the barn with her skirts around her waist. And it was there Harl found them.
I knew it!
He swung the pitchfork hard at Kobe's head.
Kobe!
I knew something was up when I saw you weeping over them cats, girl! You think your dog's an idiot?
I don't care! Kobe and I are in love and I'm leaving with him!
The core you are! You'll get your ass in this house this instant! You ought to keep the skin on it!
But Kobe's meaty hand locked over Harl's wrist, twisting and pulling it off Rena.
I'm sorry, sir, but I ain't gonna let you do that.
Well, boy, don't say you didn't ask for this.
He kicked Kobe hard in the crotch, his pants still around his ankles. Harl shoved Rena to the ground and raised his pitchfork, striking merciless blows as Kobe lay helpless.
Typical bully boy! But you've never been in a real fight in your life!
Harl stuck the fork in the dirt and pulled his long knife from the sheath on his belt.
I told you what I'd do if I caught you with my daughter again. Say goodbye to your stones, boy.
No!
Rena leaped on Harl's back.
Run, Kobe! Oh, run!
Harl turned and kicked back, slamming her into the wall of the barn. Pain flared through Rena on impact, but even through the haze, she saw Kobe pulling up his pants and leaping onto his horse. Before Harl could snatch up his pitchfork, he had kicked Pinecone's flanks and was galloping down the road.
This is your last warning, boy! Stay away from my daughter, or I ain't gonna leave you an inch to piss with! As for you, girlie, I told you what we do to tramps around here.
He grabbed Rena's hair in a fist and dragged her toward the house. Halfway across the yard, she realized they weren't going to the house at all. Harl was taking her to the outhouse.
No! Creator, please! No!
Think the Creator's gonna help you with you out sinning in broad daylight, girl? I'm doing his correspondent work.
Die, please! I promise I'll be good!
You made that promise before, girl, and see where it's got us. Should have done this right away. Made sure you took me serious.
He shoved hard and Rena fell into the outhouse, landing hard against the bench and wrenching her back. She ignored the pain and surged forward to escape, but Harl punched her right in the face as she charged, and everything went black. Rena came to a few hours later. At first, she forgot where she was, but the fire in her back where she had struck the bench and the blinding pain in her cheek when she flexed her face brought it all back. She opened her eyes in terror. It was hot in the tiny outhouse, and the air was thick with the stench of excrement. There was a vent, but Rena didn't dare open it for fear of creating a hole in the ward net. Through the cracks in the wood, Renna watched the light dim as the sun began to set. She kept hoping, praying, that Harl would come back, that it was just a scare. But as the last glimmer of light died, so too did her hopes. Outside, the Korlings were rising. She felt in her apron pocket, clutching the polished stones of Kobe's necklace tightly for strength. The demons came silently. The day's heat drifting up from the ground gave them a path from the core, it was said, and their misty forms even now would be coalescing into claws and scales and razor teeth. Renna stiffened, biting her lip in fear, and in the silence of her stillness she could hear quick sniffs as the Korling inhaled the sharp tang of her fear. Suddenly the demon struck hard at the wards. The wards held, but the demon was undeterred. At last, the Korling gave up. But the ordeal did not end there. Every Korling in the yard caught her scent before long. She endured the sparks of magic as flame demons raked at the wood with their tiny claws, shivering at the blasts of cold air as the wards converted their fire spit. Worse were the wood demons, which drove off the others before long and pounded the wards so hard that the entire structure rocked with the force of each rebound. It seemed to go on for an eternity. After Creator only knew how many hours Renna found herself praying for the wards to fail, as they surely must, before the night was through, just to put an end to it. If she'd been able to muster the strength to stand, she would have opened the door herself to let them in. More interminable time passed, and she found she lacked even the strength to cry. She lay curled tight, every muscle tensed at once, and tears flowed silently from her wide eyes as they stared into the darkness. She didn't even notice when the sounds and flashes ceased, and the demons returned to the core. The outside bar lifted, but Renna didn't react until the door opened wide to the blinding light of the rising sun. Harl put his arms around her, soothing her hair.
There, there, girl. That hurt me as much as it did you. That's it, girl. You have yourself a good cry. Get it all out.
And she did, clutching at him as she convulsed in sorrow before she finally calmed.
Yeah. Think you can mind me now? Don't want to have to do this again.
I promise, Dad.
That a girl.
Harl lifted her in his arms, carrying her into the house. He put her in her own bed and made her a hot broth, bringing lunch and dinner to her on a board she could lay across her lap. It was the first time Renna had ever seen him prepare food, but it was warm and good and filling.
You sleep in tomorrow. Rest up. And you'll be right as rain by afternoon.
Indeed, Renna did feel better the next day, and better still the day after that. Harl did not come to her at night, and he let her work at her own pace by day. Time passed, and it became clear that Kobe wasn't coming back. It was just as well, Renna thought. Sometimes, between chores, she remembered flashes of the night in the outhouse, but she blocked them quickly from her mind. It was over, and she would be a good daughter from now on, so she need not fear going back there again. 333 AR, Winter. The crowd had gathered at Leisha's hut early in the evening, while the sky was still awash in lavender and orange. At first, it was just Darcy, Vika, and their apprentices, but then Garrod and the other cutters began to filter in, carrying their warded axes on their shoulders, and Ernie and the rest of the warders in the hollow, along with their apprentices. Roger arrived soon after, and Ben the glassblower. More and more came until the yard was filled with onlookers more than she could hope to house for the night. Some had brought tents to sleep in after the lesson. Many of the visitors shifted nervously as the sun set, but they trusted in Leisha and the strength of her wards. Lanterns were lit to illuminate the stone table at the center of the gathering. A few misty forms seeped from the ground as full dark came, but the Quarlings fled as soon as they solidified. They had learned that attempting to breach Leisha's wards could bring more than simple forbiddance. Soon after, the warded man arrived, walking beside his giant stallion. Slung over the horse's back were the carcasses of several demons. The warders moved quickly, deactivating a portion of the ward net long enough for the warded man to bring the Quarling bodies through. The cutters took over then, hauling the carcasses over to the stone table as the warders reestablished the net.
That didn't take you very long.
You wanted one of each breed. It wasn't exactly a challenge.
Leisha grinned and took up her warded scalpels.
Rapt attention, all. Class is in session.
There was a communal breakfast in the morning for those who had remained at the hut. The cutters had left soon after Leisha's lesson with a warded man at their lead, looking to reinforce their learning with practical application, but most others had stayed safe behind her wards until dawn. Leisha had her apprentices cook a great vat of porridge and brewed tea by the cauldron. They passed out the bowls and mugs as guests emerged from their tents, rubbing sleep from their eyes after the late night. Roger sat away from the others on the porch of Leisha's hut.
It's not like you to sit off by yourself.
Not really hungry.
Kendall is gonna be all right. She's recovering quickly, and she doesn't blame anyone for what happened.
Yeah, maybe she should.
You have a unique gift. It's not your fault it's hard to teach.
Is it?
Leisha looked at him curiously, but he did not elucidate, instead turning away from her and looking out into the yard.
You could have told me.
Told you what?
About you and Arlen.
I don't see that it's any of your business.
But Kendall's love potions are yours. Maybe my teaching's not so bad after all. Maybe the girl just had her mind on sweet tea when it should have been on the demons.
That's not fair. I thought I was doing you a favor.
No, you thought you were shoving me off on some other girl to make yourself feel better about not being interested yourself. You're more like your mother than you know.
Leisha opened her mouth to respond, but no words came to her. Roger set down his bowl and walked off. The Quarling's graveyard was in chaos when Leisha and the others returned to town. Hundreds of folk, many of them injured and none of them familiar, filled the square. All were filthy, ragged, and half-starved. Exhausted, they rested in grim misery on the frozen cobbles. Tender Jonah was running to and fro.
Thank the Creator.
What happened?
Refugees from Fort Rison. They just started pouring in this morning, a couple hours past dawn. More arrived every moment.
The wards in the entire city failed?
Wasn't the Quarlings we fled?
Leisha turned, her eyes widening.
Merrick, what are you doing here?
Made the mistake of wintering in Rison. Usually a good idea. The cold doesn't bite so hard in the south. Not this year.
If it wasn't the demons, what happened?
Crasians. Seems the desert rats got sick of eating sand and decided to start preying on civilized folk.
Leisha turned to Roger.
Find Arlen. Have him come in secret and meet us in the back room of Smith's Tavern. Go now.
Roger nodded and vanished.
Darcy, Vika, have the apprentices triage the wounded and bring them into the hospital in order of severity.
The two herb gatherers nodded and hurried off.
Jonah, have your acolytes fetch stretchers from the hospital and help the apprentices.
Jonah bowed and left. Seeing Leisha giving direction, others drifted over. Even Smith, the town speaker and innkeeper, waited down her word.
We can hold on food a moment, but these people need water and warm shelter immediately. Put up the wedding pavilions in any tents you can find, and have every spare hand you can find hauling water. If the wells and streams don't provide fast enough, put cauldrons on a fire and fill them with snow.
I'll see to it.
Since when does the whole hollow hop to your commands?
I need to see to the wounded now, Master Merrick. But I'll have many questions for you when I'm through.
I'll be at your disposal.
Thank you. It would help if you could gather the other leaders of your group who might have something to add to your story.
Of course.
I'll settle them in at the inn. I'm surely could use a cold ale and a bite.
More than you could imagine.
There were broken bones to set and infections to treat, many from blistered feet that had burst and been left untreated as folk spent more than a week on the road, knowing that to fall behind the main group meant almost certain death. More than a few of the travelers had Quarling wounds as well, from crowding into hastily put together circles. It was a wonder any had made it to Deliverer's Hollow at all. She knew from their tales that many had not. There were several herb gatherers of varying skill among the refugees, and after a quick check of their own state, Leisha put them to work. None of the women complained. It was ever the lot of the herb gatherer to put aside her own needs for those of her charges. By the time Roja reappeared, the worst of the wounds had been treated. She left control of the hospit to Darcy and Vika and went with him to her office. When the door closed behind them, Leisha slumped against Roger, finally allowing her exhaustion to show. It was late in the afternoon, and she had been working for hours without a break, treating patients and fielding questions from apprentices and town elders alike. It would be dark in a few short hours.
You need to rest.
No time for it now. Have we found shelter for everyone?
Barely. All told, there's more refugees than the entire population of Deliverer's Hollow twice over. And I've no doubt there'll be more tomorrow. Folk have opened up their homes, but Tender Jonah still has people sleeping sitting up in his pews just to keep a roof over them. If this keeps up, every inch of the Great Ward will be covered in makeshift tents by week's end.
We'll worry over that come morning. Arlen is waiting at Smith's?
The warded man is there. Don't call him Arlen in front of those people.
It's his name, Roger.
I don't care. These people need something bigger than themselves to believe in, and right now, it's him. No one is asking you to call him Deliverer.
I've gotten used to everyone leaping when I say hop.
Well, you can trust me never to do that.
I want it no other way. Come, let's go see the warded man.
The taproom of Smith's Tavern was filled to capacity when Roger and Leisha arrived, even though the new inn was twice the size it had been when it burned down the year previous. Smith nodded to them as they entered and jerked his head toward the back room. They hurried through the crowd and ducked through the heavy door. The warded man was in the room.
I should be out hunting for more survivors before nightfall, not waiting on council meetings.
We'll be as swift as we can, but it's best we do this together.
The warded man nodded, though she could see his impatience in his clenching hands. Smith entered a moment later, ushering in Merrick, along with Stephanie, Tender Jonah, Ernie, and Alona. Merrick stared at the warded man, though his hood was drawn and his tattooed hands were hidden in the voluminous sleeves of his robe.
Are you him?
The warded man pulled back his hood, revealing his painted flesh.
You, the Deliverer, as they say?
Just a man who learned to kill demons. Something caught in your throat, Tender?
The other Deliverers never named themselves as such. They were all given the title by others.
The warded man scowled at him, but Jonah only bowed his head.
I guess it doesn't matter. I didn't really expect you to have a halo.
What happened?
12 days ago, the Krasians sacked Fort Risen. They came in the night, bypassed the hamlets, and took out the wall guards, opening the gates of the central city wide at the crack of dawn. We were all still in our beds when the killing started.
They came in the night? How is that possible?
They've got warded weapons that kill demons. Same as you hollow folk. They talk like there isn't anything in the world more important than demon killing. And taking Risen was just something to keep them busy till the sun set.
Go on.
Well, it's clear their eyes were on the central grain silos because they took those first. Their warriors killed any man that resisted and bent any woman that looked old enough to bleed. They must have killed thousands that first morning and took the city walls to keep the rest of us in. We were beaten, tied together, and dragged into warehouses like cattle.
How did you escape?
At first I didn't think any of the desert rats spoke a civilized tongue. I know a couple of sand words I picked up from other messengers, but it's mostly curses, not much to start a conversation with. I figured I was done for, but after a day, a fat one came in who spoke Thesan like a native. He started rounding up the royals, landowners, and skilled laborers, bringing them to the Krasian Duke. I was among those.
You saw their leader?
Oh, I saw that big bastard, all right. They brought me before him, bound and battered, and when he heard I was a warder, he set me free like nothing had happened. Even gave me a purse of gold for my troubles. I think he meant for me to teach them our wards, but I was over the wall and out of the city at dawn the next morning.
Their leader, what was he wearing?
Open white robe and head rag, with black underneath, like their warriors wear. And he wore a crown. That's how I knew he was their duke.
A crown? Are you sure? He didn't just have a jewel set in his turban.
I'm sure. It was gold, and covered in jewels and wards. Ripping thing must have been worth more than every other duke's crown combined.
And this duke, did he speak our tongue?
Better than some Angerians I know.
What was his name?
Don't think anyone said it. They all called him some sand word. Shamaka, or some such. I figured it meant Duke.
Shardamaka.
Aye, that was it.
Knight!
What is it?
Was he about this tall, with a forked-oiled beard and a sharp-hooked nose?
Yes.
Did he carry a warded spear?
They all carried warded spears.
You would remember this one.
Aye. Metal it was, point to butt, and covered in etched wards.
What is it?
A Manjar deer. I know him.
What does this mean?
It makes no difference now. Go on. What happened next?
As I said, I scaled the wall and fled the city the moment they set me free. The hamlets I passed through were half deserted by the time I arrived. When word of the attack reached them, the smart folk grabbed what they could and were on the road before the blood on the cobbles of the central city was dry. Those too weak to travel or too scared of the night stayed behind. I think more stayed than left, but there were still tens of thousands on the road. I bought a horse from an old fellow who got left behind and galloped off. I caught up to the folk on the road soon after. The groups were too large to stick together. No city could absorb so many. Most went to Lacton and its hamlets, where any with a hook and line can fill their belly. But the jonglers have had a lot to say about you. And them that believed you were really the deliverer come again flocked here. I needed to get back to Angiers and report to the Duke, but I couldn't just leave folk on the road with so few to ward for them, so I offered up my services.
It was a good thing you did, Merrick. These people never would have made it without you. Go and take your ease out in the taproom while we discuss your news.
I have a room reserved for you upstairs. Stephanie will see you there.
The warded man put his hood up as soon as the messenger left.
Daylight is fading. If there are more on the road, I need to make sure they see the dawn.
Take Garrett and as many cutters as can sit a horse.
Roger, get your cloak. You're coming with us.
Roger nodded, and they headed for the rear exit.
You'll need warders. I'll go.
Ilona was on her feet instantly, grabbing Ernie's arm.
You'll do no such thing, Ernol.
You're always complaining I'm not brave enough. Now you want me to hide when people need my help.
You'll prove nothing to me by getting yourself killed. You haven't sat a horse in years.
She has a point, Dad.
Stay out of this. The town may hop at your word, but I'm still your father.
There's no time for this. Are you coming or not?
Not.
Coming.
Ernie followed the other men out.
Oh, that idiot.
Take as long back here as you like. I need to get out front.
Smit, Stephanie, and Jonah quickly filed out of the room, leaving Leisha alone with her fuming mother.
He'll be all right, Mom. There's nowhere in all the world safer than traveling with Roger and the warded man.
He's a frail man. He can't ride with young men, and he'll catch his death of cold. He's never been the same after the flux took him last year.
Why, Mother, it seems like you truly care.
Don't take that tone with me. Of course I care. He's my husband. If you knew what it was like to be married almost 30 years, you wouldn't say such things.
You're right, Mom. I'm sorry.
I'm right? Did you just say I'm right?
I did.
Ilona opened her arms.
Hug me now, child. Hoo-hoo, while it lasts.
Leisha embraced her tightly.
He'll be fine.
Yeah, you're right, of course. He may look a terror, but no demon can stand up to your tattooed friend.
Both of us right in one night, and Dad not here to witness.
Oh, he'll never believe it.
Ilona dabbed at her eyes with a kerchief, and Leisha pretended not to notice.
So, was that the same Merrick you used to shine on? The one you ran off to Angiers with?
I never shined on him, Mother.
Oh, sell that tampweed tale to someone who doesn't know you, child. The whole town knew you wanted him, even if you were too prudish to act on it. And why not? He's as handsome as a wolf, and a messenger on top. That man's enough for any woman. Why do you think he used to make Garrett so jealous?
Everything made Garrett jealous, Mom.
Oh, he's just like his father. Simple men ruled by their passions.
The Merrick I saw when we were alone on the road wasn't much different.
And you used Gatherer's tricks to keep him off you, instead of taking it as the perfect opportunity to have a romp with no one the wiser.
Like you would have.
Yes, and why not? Skirts lift up for a reason. women have needs down below, just as men. Don't lie to yourself and pretend otherwise.
I know that, Mum.
Ah, you know it, and yet you still sew your petticoat shut and think denying yourself somehow makes you heroic. How can you treat everybody in the Hollow when you don't understand the needs of your own?
Leisha said nothing. Her mother had a most unsettling way of reading her thoughts.
You should go up and talk to Merrick while your other suitors are out of town. He's had years in tragedy to season him. Come out a hero. Folk outside can't stop singing his praises. Perhaps he'll be more to your liking now.
I don't know.
Oh, go on. Take a plate of food up to his room and talk to him. It's not like you have to let him stick you this very night. Though, if you did, it'd be a better use of your night than fretting over problems that will remain come morning.
Several times they passed scenes of slaughter. Bodies, alone and in groups, torn apart by Korlings when night fell upon them without succor. The warded man cursed the sights, spurring Twilight Dancer on harder, not bothering to stop after the first. The others who followed him, even Garrett and the Cutters, were inexperienced riders falling well behind his powerful stallion, but he didn't care. There were refugees on the road, driven out of their homes by Aman Jardir, the man he had been fool enough to call friend, and he needed to find and protect as many of them as he could before night fell. But he would hold Jardir to account for every life lost. Kor spawn him if he did not. More than an hour of hard riding brought him to a large group of refugees. The sky was awash with color as the sun set, but the folk were still working on their wards. They had painted the magical symbols on wooden boards, but the area they needed to secure was irregularly shaped, and the net was out of alignment. He galloped right to the edge of the ward net, pulling Twilight Dancer up short and leaping down with his warding kit. Some of their wards he turned or twisted to align properly with others, but many he altered with charcoal or turned the boards over and replaced entirely. A crowd began to gather around him, folk clutching one another and whispering as they stared at his tattooed hands and tried to get a peek under his hood. None dared approach him, though, and his work went uninterrupted. When his companions finally caught up, Ernie fumbled his way down off his horse to assist. Roger and the others placed themselves protectively between him and the crowd.
Deliver her! Please! My sister is still on the road!
The warded man looked up sharply at that.
Ernie, take over the warding. Draft as many of their warders as you need. I'll leave a couple of archers to buy you time to finish.
Ernie nodded and went to the Rizonian warders, who had been standing back with the rest of the refugees.
Let her go.
Garrett complied immediately, and the woman fell to her knees before him, clutching at his feet.
Please, deliver her. My sister is with child, too far along to sit a horse. She and our grandparents couldn't keep up with the group, so our husbands bade me take the children on ahead while they set a slower pace.
And they haven't caught up?
It's nearly dark. Please, deliverer, save them.
I'm not the deliverer, but I swear I'll save your family if I can. Garrett, pick two archers to stay with Ernie while the wards here are completed. The rest of you are with me.
Garrett nodded, and moments later they thundered out of the camp, riding even more frantically than before. It was dark when they found them. Five people, as the desperate woman had said. They stood in a tiny makeshift ward circle surrounded by dozens of Korlings. Flame demons spat fire and wind demons swooped down from the sky. There was even a rock demon towering over the rest. Roja could see the holes in the web, holes more than large enough for a demon to squeeze through. The two young men stood by those holes, stabbing out with pitchforks to drive the demons back as an elderly couple tended to the obvious reason why they had fallen behind. The young woman at the circle's center was giving birth. The warded man kicked his stallion forward, leaping ahead of the others. He cast his robe aside and it floated to the ground in his wake. Garrett and the Cutters followed suit, freeing their warded axes as they galloped through the fray. The warded man rode Twilight Dancer right into the rock demon. The warded man leapt from his horse as the demon was driven back, grabbing one of its horns to hold onto as he rode the Korling to the ground. Wanda and the archers took a different tack, halting their horses several dozen yards back and sighting the wind demons that filled the sky. They came crashing down one after another, Roger slipped from his horse, leaving it with the archers, and took up his fiddle, playing even as he ran for the small circle. In moments, he was inside the circle and changed his tune to the jarring notes that would drive the demons away from the small family. The warded man broke away from the demons he was engaging and was at Roger's side in an instant. The Rizonians backed away from him in fear, but the girl was too far gone to even notice.
Get my herb pouch. Her water's broken and her contractions are close. There's no time to get her to a gatherer.
Roger ran out to Twilight Dancer and retrieved the precious herb pouch.
Do you know what you're doing?
I was apprenticed to an herb gatherer for 6 months as part of my messenger training. I've seen it done.
Seen?
Do you want to do it?
Me?
Then just play your ripping fiddle and keep the demons back while I work.
Hours later, with the sounds of battle long faded, a shrill cry broke the night. Roger looked at the screaming babe and smiled.
There will be no denying it when people call you Deliverer now.
Leisha carried the steaming tray up the steps of Smith's Inn, her heart beating nervously. Twice before, she had considered giving herself to Merrick, whom she could not deny was handsome and quick-witted. Both times, Merrick's character had failed at the key moment, making Leisha feel that in his mind, her needs were second to his own, if he was considering them at all.
Hi.
Merrick was shirtless and damp, having just come from the warm basin of water in his room. His eyes widened as he caught sight of Leisha.
I didn't mean to disturb you, just thought you might do with a hot meal before you sleep.
Yes, thank you.
Merrick grabbed his tunic and pulled it on. Leisha looked away as he did so, though the image of his muscled body lingered in her mind. Merrick took the tray and brought it over to the small table and chair by the bed. He lifted the lid to reveal a hot joint of meat, moist with its own juices, nestled amid spiced potatoes and fresh steamed greens.
Food in Deliverer's Hollow is soon to grow short, but Smith's stores have held out for a night, at least.
A bed is glorious enough, after lying down in snow for near 2 weeks. This is a gift from the Creator himself.
Merrick tore into the meat, and Leisha took a strange satisfaction in watching him eat the food she had prepared. She remembered the feeling, distantly, from the time she and Garrod had been promised, and she first cooked for him. It seemed a century ago in another life.
That was delicious.
It's a small thanks for what you did, bringing those people to safety in their time of need.
Even after I failed you in yours.
Leisha looked at him in surprise.
Last year, when Flux caught the Hollow and you needed to get home, I made unfair demands for my assistance.
Merrick.
No, let me speak. When we were on the road to Angiers that first time, I was so taken with you, I thought we would be raising children together within a year. But then, in the tent, when I couldn't be a man with you, I...
Merrick!
It made me crazy. I felt like I needed to get far away from you, but when I did, I couldn't stop thinking of you, even when I lay with other women. But when I saw you again, I felt so hard, and I wanted to make up for my past failing quickly before something else prevented it. It was unfair to you, and I'm sorry.
I'm not a child. I was as responsible for what happened as you.
That's kind of you to say, but you and I both know it isn't so. I'm glad you managed to make it home, and without having to surrender your virtue.
Leisha had been leaning in toward him, but she flinched back from him at the words, for indeed, her virtue had been torn from her on the trip, taken by bandits on the road because she went without proper escort, all because of Merrick's impatience and inability to think of others before himself.
Can't get over how you run the Hollow now. What happened to the soft girl who turned the head of every man that saw her? Overnight, you've become Hagbruna. I'll wager even the Coralings are scared of you now.
Leisha shook her head to clear it, sensing the moment they had been about to share slipping away.
What are your plans now? Will you help us hunt for more survivors on the road, or do you mean to take your group of refugees directly onto Angiers?
Neither.
What do you mean?
Now that the Rizonians are safe, it's time I moved on. The Duke needs word of the Krasian attack, and I've let them slow me long enough.
Slow you? Their lives depended on you.
I couldn't leave people out on the road without succor.
but they have succor now. I'm not Rhizonian. I've no further responsibility to them.
But Deliverer's Hollow can't possibly absorb so many.
I'll tell the Duke. Let it be his problem.
They're not a problem, Merrick. They're people.
What do you expect me to do? Devote the rest of my life to looking out for them? That's not a messenger's way.
Well, I'm glad we never ended up raising children together then. Enjoy your bed, messenger.
Leisha took the tray and left.
What are we going to do?
Leisha had called a late meeting of the town council to discuss Merrick's revelation that he was leaving the refugees in Deliverer's Hollow and pressing on alone in the morning.
Take them in, of course. Open our homes while helping them build their own. We can't just leave folk without food or shelter.
The Great Ward can't accommodate so many new houses.
So we'll build another. We have near 2,000 hands to do the work, and miles of forest for material.
Not to scuff the wards, but just how are we supposed to feed so many in the dead of winter? If more keep coming, we'll all be eating snow before long.
Every young woman in the Hollow can shoot a bow now. We'll put them to hunting and the boys to trapping.
Well, that will only go so far.
Corkweed may be tough and bitter, but it's nutritious enough. Grows on just about everything and survives year-round. Put the younger children to work gathering it, and I'll think of a way to cook it and season it in bulk. If that's not enough, there are edible barks and even insects that can fill a starving belly.
Weeds? And insects? You're gonna ask folks to eat bugs?
I'm seeing to it they don't starve, Mother. If I have to sit and eat bugs in front of them to set an example, that's what I'll do.
Well, enough for you. But don't expect me to do the same. Ugh.
You'll have your own part to play.
I'm not making my house into an inn for every vagabond that comes down the road.
It's getting dark, Mother. You'd best head home. We'll talk in the morning.
The others took this as the meeting's end and filed out of the room after Alona, leaving Leisha alone with Stephanie.
Don't fret. I'm sure your mother will be more than willing to do her part, opening her home to the Rhizonian men with the biggest dangles.
My mom isn't the only woman in this village who broke her wedding vows. Don't ever make the mistake of thinking Brunan's secrets died with her. Keep your hypocrisy to yourself.
It was well over a week after Merrick rode off, to the cheers and adulation of those he was deserting, before the warded man and Roger returned. Ernie and the Cutters had drifted back into the city over the first few days, each bringing groups of refugees with them. But the warded man and Roger kept ranging ever farther, and all who came to the Hollow told stories of encountering them. Leisha was proud of Arlen and Roger for the lives they were saving, but by the time they returned, so many folk had come that she despaired of feeding them all, weeds and bugs or no.
We went as close to Rhizon as we dared.
Roger spoke over hot tea at her cottage the day they returned.
I think we found everyone who took the road, though there are likely some who tried to cut over land. The Kratians have dug in firmly. They send out regular patrols on the road.
They've only dug in temporarily. It won't be long before they're on the move again.
Back to the ripping desert, I hope.
No. They'll conquer Lacton, and then they'll turn north and head right for the Hollow.
How can you know that?
The Krasians believe that Khaji, the first deliverer, unified the tribes of Krasia and then rode out of the desert, spending 2 decades conquering the lands to the north. He called it Sharuk's Sun, the Daylight War, and levied the men into Sharuk Ka, the great holy war against demonkind. If Amon Jardir thinks he is the deliverer come again, he will attempt to follow the same path.
What are we to do?
Build defenses. Fight them every inch of the way.
No, I won't support that. These aren't demons you're talking about killing, Arlen. They're human beings.
You think I don't know that? I have Kratian friends, Leisha. Can you say the same?
Leisha looked at him in shock, but she recovered and shook her head.
Make no mistake. The Kratians believe every single person in the North is inferior to the least of them. They may make a show of being merciful to the leaders they can use to further their goals, but there will be no such concessions to regular folk. They will kill or enslave everyone who does not swear utter submission to Jardir and the Avesia. We have to fight.
We could retreat to Angiers, hide within the city walls.
We can't give them any ground. I know these people. If we show fear and retreat, they'll think us weak and press the attack harder.
Us?
still don't like it.
Your liking is irrelevant. The good news is that I doubt they have more than 6,000 warriors of fighting age. The bad news is that the least of those can outfight any three cutters. And when they're ready to move, they'll have levied thousands of slave troops from Ryzen.
How are we supposed to fight against that?
Unity. We need to open the dialogue with Lacton now while the lines of communication are still clear. And petition the Dukes of Angiers and Milne to put aside their differences and commit to a common defense.
I don't know the Duke of Milne, but I grew up in Rhinebeck's court when my master Eric was his herald. Rhinebeck is more likely to put aside his differences with the Corlings than with Duke Euchre.
Then we'll have to convince him personally. All of us.
I'd just as well not go to Lacton. I'm not very welcome there.
Oh, so the tale's true then. The Dockmaster's tried to kill you.
After a fashion.
Roger sat in the music shell that night, playing to soothe the hundreds of refugees still living in tents in the Corlings' graveyard. Many of them drifted over to sit by the shell, basking in the warm glow of the Great Ward as they fell under Roger's spell. His music swept them up and carried them far away to forget, at least for a short time, that their lives had been shattered. It seemed a terribly inadequate gift, but it was all he had to give. He kept his jongleur's mask in place, letting them see nothing of the bleakness he felt inside. Tender Jonah was waiting for him when he finished playing. The holy man was young, not yet 30, but he was well-loved by the Hollowers, and no one had worked harder to bring comfort and necessities to the refugees. In addition to organizing most of the food and shelter rationing, the tender walked among the refugees, learning their names and letting them know they were not alone. He led prayers for the dead, found caregivers for orphans, and married lovers brought together by tragedy.
Thank you for doing this. I could feel their spirits lifting as they watched you play. My own as well.
I'll perform every evening I'm not needed elsewhere.
Bless you. Your music gives such strength to them.
I wish it could give some to me. Sometimes I think in my case, the opposite is true.
Nonsense. Strength of spirit is not some finite thing where one man must lose for another to gain. The Creator grants strength and weakness to us all. What has you feeling weak, child?
Child? I'm not part of your audience, Tender. I have my fiddle, and you have yours.
Roger pointed with his bow at the heavy, leather-bound cannon that Jonah held in his hands. Roger knew his words hurt the tender, and that the man deserved better, but his mood was black, and Jonah had picked the wrong time to condescend. He waited for the holy man to shout at him, ready and willing to shout right back. But Jonah never grew vexed. He slipped the book into a satchel he wore for just that purpose, and spread his hands to show they were empty.
As your friend, then, and someone who understands your pain.
How could you possibly understand my pain?
Oh, I love her too, Roger. I don't think I've ever met a man who didn't. She used to come almost every day to read at the Holy House, and we would talk for hours. I've seen her shine on men who didn't deserve her, never even noticing that I was a man as well.
How did you deal with it? How do you stop loving someone?
Creator didn't make love conditional. Love is what makes us human, what separates us from the Corlins. There's value in it, even when it's not requited.
You love her still?
But I love my Vika and our children even more. Love is as infinite as spirit. Do not waste years lamenting what you do not have with her. Instead, cherish what you do. And if you ever need to speak with someone who understands your trial, come to me. I promise to leave the cannon in its satchel.
He slapped Roger on the shoulder and walked off, leaving Roger feeling as if a weight had been lifted from him. The lamps were lit in Leisha's cottage when Roger arrived, and the front door was open. Neglecting his warded cloak, Roger had held the Corlings off with his fiddle, which meant Leisha had heard him coming long before he arrived. Roger stopped playing when he reached Leisha's warded path. He found Leisha curled in an ancient rocking chair wrapped in a tattered old shawl. They had belonged to her teacher Bruna, and Leisha always went to them when she had doubt. Her eyes were red and puffy, the crumpled kerchief in her hand soaked through. He looked at her and understood what Jonah meant about cherishing what they had. Even when she was at her lowest, she left her door open for him. Could the other men in her life say the same?
You're not still mad at me?
Of course not. We both did a little spitting, is all.
I'm glad.
Your kerchief is soaked.
Roger flicked his wrist, pulling out one of the many colored kerchiefs in his sleeve. He held it out to her, but when she reached for it, he tossed it into the air, quickly adding several more as if from empty air. Roger began to juggle them, creating a circle of colored cloth floating in the air.
Pick a color.
Green.
Faster than her eye could see, his hand snatched that cloth and tossed it her way, making it seem to have leapt from the circle of its own accord. Roger caught the rest and tucked them back away as Leisha dried her face.
What is it?
Bad enough the demons hunt us in the night, but now men are killing one another in the daylight. Arlen wants us to make war with both, but how can I support that?
They will find us, whether we support it or not.
Do you remember that night in the cave?
Roger nodded. It had been the previous summer, a few days after the warded man had rescued them on the road. The three of them had taken shelter from the rain, and while there, Leisha had learned that Roger and the warded man had killed the bandits who had robbed them and ravished Leisha. She had been furious with them and called them murderers.
Do you know why I was so angry with you and Arlen?
Roger shook his head.
Because I could have killed those men if I'd wanted.
She reached into her dress pocket, producing a slim needle coated in some greenish mixture.
I carry these needles for putting down mad animals. I keep them in my dress pocket because they're too dangerous to leave lying in the herb cloth, or even my apron, which I take off sometimes. No man would long survive a puncture from one of these, and even a scratch might kill him in time.
I'll wear my tongue around you in the future.
I had one in my free hand when I threw the blinding powder at the bandit leader. If I had struck the mute with it when he grabbed me, he would have been dead before the leader recovered, and I could have struck him too.
And I could have handled the third.
Roger lifted an empty hand, and suddenly a knife appeared in it.
So why didn't you?
Because it's one thing to kill a Coraline and another to kill a person, even a bad person. I wanted to. Sometimes I even look back and wish I had. But when the time came to do it, I couldn't.
Roger looked at the knife in his hand a moment, then slipped it back into the special harness on his forearm, rebuttoning his cuff.
Don't think I could either. I started learning knife tricks when I was 5, but it's all mummery. I've never so much as cut someone.
Once I knew I couldn't do it, I just stopped fighting when they pushed me down. Night, I even spit on my hand to wet myself when the first one fumbled with his britches. But even when they left me sobbing in the dirt, I didn't wish I killed them.
You wished they killed you instead?
Leisha nodded.
I felt the same way. After Master Jacob was killed, I didn't want revenge. I just wanted the pain to end.
I remember. You begged me to let you die.
That's why I went with the warded man to the bandit camp.
For me?
No. Those men needed to be put down, like any mad horse, Leisha. We weren't the first folk they robbed, and we wouldn't have been the last. Especially once they had my portable circle. But we didn't kill them. The warded man walked in and stole your horse. I grabbed the circle and we ran. They were all breathing and relatively unbroken when we left.
Food for the demons.
The warded man had killed most of the demons in the area. We didn't see a one when we walked to their camp, and dawn was only a few hours away. It was a better chance than they gave us by far. Why do folk call an herb gatherer to put down an animal? Any axe or mallet will do the job.
Can't bring themselves to kill a loyal animal. Or they hold out hope I can heal it. But sometimes I can't, and the animal is suffering. The needles are quick and kind.
Maybe the warded man is too.
Are you saying you think we should fight the Krasians?
I don't know. But I think we need to keep a needle in our hand, even if we don't use it.
...333 AR, Spring. Leisha watched as Wanda and Garrod faced off in the Corlings' graveyard, circling slowly. Wanda was taller than any other woman in the Hollow, including the refugees, but giant Garrod dwarfed her regardless. She was 15, and Garrod near to 30. Still, Garrod wore a look of intense concentration, while Wanda's face was calm. Suddenly he lunged, grabbing for her, but Wanda caught his wrist in one hand and pivoted, pressing his elbow hard with her other hand.
Well done.
Wanda gave Garrod a hand to help him up. Since he had been giving Sharasak lessons to the Hollowers, she had shown herself to be the warded man's best student by far.
Sharasak teaches diverting force. You can't keep using the wild swings you would against a Corling.
Or a tree.
Try again. Keep your limbs in close and your balance centered. Don't give her an opening. And you, don't grow overconfident. The weakest Dalsharam still has a lifetime of training against your few months. They'll be your true test.
Wanda nodded, her smile disappearing, and she and Garrod bowed and began to circle again.
They're learning quickly.
The warden man came to join Leisha and Roger. She never trained with the other Hollowers, but she watched carefully each day as they practiced the Sharakin, her quick mind cataloging every move. Again, Wanda threw Garrod onto his back.
It really is a beautiful art. It's a shame its only purpose is to maim and kill.
The people that invented it are no different. Brilliant, beautiful, and deadly beyond reckoning.
And you're sure they're coming?
There isn't a doubt in my mind. As much as I wish otherwise.
What do you think Duke Reinbeck will do?
I met him a handful of times in my messenger days, but I know little of his heart.
There's not much to know. Reinbeck spends his hours doing three things: counting money, drinking wine, and betting younger and younger brides, hoping one of them will bear him an heir.
He's seedless.
I wouldn't call him that any place where it might be overheard. He's hung herb gatherers for less insult. He blames his wives.
They always do. As if being seedless somehow makes them less than a man.
Oh, doesn't it?
Don't be absurd.
Even the warded man looked at her doubtfully.
Regardless, fertility was one of Bruna's specialties, and she taught me well. Perhaps I can win favor by curing him.
Favor? He'd make you his duchess for it, and get the child on you.
It doesn't matter. Even if your herbs can awaken his seed, it could be months before there were any proof of it. We'll need more leverage than that.
More leverage than an army of desert warriors on his doorstep?
Reinbeck will need to mobilize well before it comes to that if he's to have any hope of stopping Jardir. And dukes are not men apt to take such risks without great convincing.
You'll have Reinbeck's brothers to contend with as well. Prince Michael will take the throne if Reinbeck dies without an heir. And Prince Peter is shepherd of the Tenders of the Creator. Thamos, the youngest, leads Reinbeck's guards, the wooden soldiers.
Are any of them likely to see reason?
Not likely. The one to convince is Lord Jansen, the First Minister. None of the princes could find their boots without Jansen. Not a thing goes on in Angiers that Jansen doesn't track in his neat little ledgers, and the royal family delegates almost everything to him.
So if Jansen doesn't support us, it's unlikely the Duke will either.
Jansen is a coward. Getting him to agree to war won't be easy. You may have to resort to other methods.
The warded man and Leisha looked at him curiously.
You're the ripping warded man! Half the people south of Milne think you're the deliverer already! A few meetings with the tenders and the right tale spun at the Jongleur's guild house, and the other half will believe it too!
No, I won't pretend to be something I'm not, even for this.
Who's to say you're not?
Not you too. It's bad enough from the Jongleur eager for tales and the tender blind with faith. Knowledge cures your patience, not prayer.
I'm also a ward witch, and you made me so. It's honest word, I put more store in books of science than the tender's canon. But science falls short of explaining why a few squiggles in the dirt can bar a Corlin or do it harm. There's more to the universe than science. Perhaps there's room for a deliverer, too.
I'm not heaven sent. The things I've done, no heaven would have me.
Many believe the deliverers of old were just men like you. Generals who arose when the time was right and the people needed them. Will you turn your back on humanity over semantics?
It ain't semantics. Folks start looking to me to solve all their problems, they'll never learn to solve their own.
He turned to Roger.
Everything's set.
Horses laden and saddled. We can leave when you're ready.
It had been over a month since spring melt. The trees lining the messenger road to Angiers were green with fresh leaves. Roger held tightly to Leisha as they rode. He had never been much of a rider and generally mistrusted horses, especially those not hitched to a cart. Fortunately, he was small enough to ride behind Leisha without straining a beast too far. As with everything she turned her mind to, Leisha had mastered riding in short order and commanded the horse with confidence. It didn't help his churning stomach that they were returning to Angiers. When he had left the city with Leisha a year ago, it had been as much to save his own life as to help her get home. He wasn't eager to return, even alongside his powerful friends, especially when it meant letting the Jongleurs Guild know he was still alive.
Duke Rhinebeck, is he overweight? Does he drink?
Yes, and yes. He looks like he swallowed the whole beer barrel, and it's not far from the truth.
Leisha had been asking him questions about the Duke all morning, her ever-active mind already working on a diagnosis and potential cure, though she had yet to meet the man. Roger knew her work was important, but it had been close to 10 years since he had lived in the palace. Many of her questions taxed his memory, and he had no idea if his answers were still accurate.
Does he sometimes have trouble performing a bed?
How in the core would I know? He wasn't the boy-buggering type.
Leisha frowned at him, and Roger immediately felt ashamed.
What's bothering you, Roger? You've been distracted all morning.
Nothing.
Don't lie to me. You've never been good at it.
Being on this road again has me thinking about last year, I guess.
Bad memories all around. I keep expecting bandits to leap from the trees.
Not with this lot around.
Roger nodded ahead of them to Wanda, who rode a light courser and had her great bow strung and ready in a sheath by her saddle. She sat up straight and alert, eyes sharp within her scarred face. Behind them, Garrod rode a heavy Garin, though the giant man made the huge beast look a more normal size by comparison. His huge axe handles jutted up from either shoulder, ready at a moment's notice. Trained demon hunters both, there was little to fear from mortal foes with them on guard. But most comforting of all, even in daylight, was the warded man. He rode his giant black stallion at the lead of the small column, shunning idle talk, but his presence was a silent reminder that no harm could come to any of them while he was near.
So, is it the road that bothers you, or what lies at its end?
Roger looked at her, wondering how she could just pick thoughts right out of his head.
What do you mean?
You never told me how you came to be at my hospital last year, beaten near to death. And you never went to the guard over it, or told the Jongleurs Guild you were still alive, even after they buried Master Jacob.
Roger thought of Jacob, Arik's former master, who had been like a grandfather to him after Arik died. Jacob took him in when he had nowhere else to go, and put his own reputation in the hat to start Roger's career. The old man paid a heavy price for his kindness, beaten to death for Roger's crime. Roger tried to speak, but tears filled his eyes.
Shh. We'll talk about it when you're ready.
They were 2 days from the city, not far from where the warded man had first found Roger and Leisha on the road, when he turned his horse and rode into the trees. Leisha kicked her horse ahead, picking her way through the trees until she came alongside the warded man. With no natural path to follow, much less one wide enough for two, they had to continually shift and duck to avoid low-hanging limbs. Garrod was forced to get down from his horse entirely and walk.
Where are we going?
To get your grimoires.
I thought you said they were in Angiers.
The duchy, not the city.
The path soon widened, but still in a way that seemed natural to the untrained eye. Leisha was an herb gatherer, though, and knew plants better than anything.
You cultivated this. You felled trees and widened the path, then hid your work so it doesn't seem a path at all.
I value my privacy.
It must have taken years.
Well, my strength has some uses. I can fell a tree almost as fast as Garrod, and drag it off easier than a team of horses.
They followed the secret path deep into the woods until it veered off to the left. Ignoring the clear path, the warded man turned right and again plunged into the trees. The others followed. There, hidden in a hollow, was a stone wall so covered in ivy and moss that it had been invisible until they were upon it.
I can't believe this is just sitting here, so close to the road.
There are hundreds of ruins like this in the forest. The trees reclaimed land quickly after the return. A few are common messenger stops, but others, like this one, have gone unnoticed for centuries.
They followed the wall to a gate, ancient and rusted shut. The warded man took a key from his robes and inserted it in the lock. He pushed the gates open. Inside was a stable that seemed collapsed from the front, but the rear half of the structure was intact and clear, with a large covered cart and more than enough space for the four horses.
Miraculous that half the stable should survive the year so well, and the other half not.
The warded man said nothing as they brushed down the horses. Like the rest of the compound, the main house was in ruins. The roof caved and looked decidedly unsafe. The warded man led them around the back to a servant's house, still quite large by the standards of anyone raised in the hamlets. The place was halfway collapsed, like the stable, but the door the warded man led them through was heavy, thick, and locked. The door opened into one great room restored to function as a workshop. Warding equipment lay on every surface, along with sealed jars of ink and paint, various half-finished projects, and piles of materials. There was a small cupboard by the fireplace. Leisha opened it to find one cup and one plate, one bowl, and one spoon. A knife was stuck in a small cutting board by the cold pot hanging in the hearth.
So cold. So lonely.
He doesn't even have a bed. He must sleep on the floor.
I used to think I was alone living in Bruna's hut, but this...
Over here.
The warded man moved to a corner of the room with a large bookshelf. That got Leisha's attention immediately, and she headed over.
Are those the grimoires?
Those are nothing. Common wards and books, histories and basic maps. Nothing you can't find in the library of any warder or messenger worth the name.
Then where are they?
The warded man moved over to a nondescript section of the floor and stamped his heel down hard in a precise spot. The board was on a fulcrum, and as one end dipped into a hollow in the floor, the other rose, revealing a small metal ring. The warded man grasped the ring and pulled, opening a trap door in the flooring. He lit a lantern and led the way down the steps into a large basement. The walls were stone and the room was cold and dry. There was a hall leading in the direction of the collapsed main house, but a giant stone block had fallen to bar the path. Warded weapons lay stacked and hung everywhere. Axes, spears of varying length, pole arms and knives, all delicately etched with battle wards. Dozens of crank bow bolts, literally thousands of arrows stacked in gross bundles. There were trophies of a sort as well, demon skulls, horns and talons, dented shields and broken spears. Garrett and Wanda drew wards in the air.
Here.
The warded man spoke to Wanda, handing her a bundle of arrows. Delicate wards entwined along their wooden shafts and metal heads.
These will bite Corling flesh deeper than the ones in your quiver.
Wanda's hands shook as she accepted the gift. Speechless, she bowed her head, and the warded man bowed in return.
Garrett!
He selected a heavy machete, its blade etched with hundreds of tiny wards.
You can hack through wood demon limbs like errant vines with this.
Garrett dropped to his knees.
Oh, get up! I ain't the rip and deliverer.
I ain't calling you any names. All I know is I spent my whole life acting the selfish fool. Since you came to the Hollow, I seen the sun. I seen how I let my pride and my lust blind me. The Creator blessed me with strong arms to kill demons, not to take whatever I wanted.
The warded man held out his hand, and when Garrett took it, he pulled the man roughly to his feet.
Maybe you've seen the sun, Garrett, but that doesn't mean I showed it to you. You'd lost your dad just a day before. That'll grow any man. Show him what's important in life.
He held out the machete again, and Garrett took it. It was a huge blade, but it seemed little more than a dagger in Garrett's giant hand. He looked at the delicate warding in wonder. The warded man looked at Leisha.
Those.
He pointed to a series of shelves at the far end of the room.
Are the grimoires.
Leisha immediately moved toward the shelves, but he caught her arm.
I'll let you go there and we'll lose you for the next 10 hours.
Leisha frowned, wanting nothing more than to pull her arm away and bury herself in the heavy, leather-bound tomes. But she suppressed the urge. This was not her home. She nodded.
We'll bring the books with us when we leave. I have other copies. Those will be yours to keep.
Everyone gets a gift but me?
We'll find you something.
The warded man moved over to the blocked corridor. The keystone that had collapsed from the archway looked to weigh hundreds of pounds, but he lifted it away easily leading them to a heavy, locked door that had been hidden in the darkness. He produced another key from his robes and turned it in the lock, opening the door and stepping inside. He touched a taper to a huge stand lamp by the door, and it flared to life, reflecting off large mirrors carefully placed around the room. Instantly, the huge chamber was filled with bright light. Carpets, rich and thick, woven in faded designs from ages past, covered the stone floor. The walls were hung with dozens of paintings of forgotten people and events, masterworks in gilded frames, along with metal-framed mirrors and polished furniture. Treasures lay piled in rain barrels around the room, filled to bursting with ancient gold coins, gems, and jewelry. Machines of unknown purpose lay partially disassembled alongside great marble statues and busts, musical instruments, and countless other riches. There were bookshelves everywhere.
How is this possible?
Corlings care little for riches. Messengers pick the easily accessible ruins clean, but there are countless places they've never been. Whole cities lost to demons and swallowed up by the land. I've tried to preserve whatever survived the elements.
You're richer than all the dukes combined.
I have little use for it. Take whatever you like.
Roger ran through the room, running his fingers through piles of coins and jewelry, picking up statuettes and ancient weapons.
Knight, take me away!
He ducked behind a broken statue, reappearing with a fiddle in his hands. The strings had rotted away, but the wood was still strong and polished. Roger held up the prize in delight.
No, I like the other room better.
Aye, me too.
The gates of Fort Angiers were closed.
During the day, they usually open wide for the loggers and their carts.
Roger sat now in the driver's seat of the cart from the warded man's keep, pulled by Leisha's horse. She sat beside him, in front of several bags of books and other items used to disguise the cart's false bottom.
Maybe Rhinebeck's taken the Krasian threat more seriously than we thought.
Indeed, as they drew closer to the city, they saw guards armed with loaded crankbows patrolling the wall top and woodworkers carving arrow slits at the lower levels of the wall. Where the gate had once had a single pair of guards, now there were several standing alert with their spears at the ready.
Merrick's tale likely set things in a frenzy, but I'll wager those guards are there more to prevent thousands of refugees from pouring into the city than they are to ward off any Krasian attack.
The Duke couldn't possibly refuse all those people, sucker.
Why not? Duke Euchre lets the beggars of Milne sleep on the unwarded streets every night.
Aye, state your business.
We come by way of Deliverer's Hollow. I'm Roger Halfgrip, licensed to the Jongleur's Guild. These are my companions.
Halfgrip? The fiddler?
The same.
So you play once. Who are the others?
This is Leisha, herb gatherer of Deliverer's Hollow, formerly of the hospice of Mistress Giselle in Angiers. The others are cutters, come to guard us on the road. Garrod, Wanda, and, Flynn.
Why is he all covered?
He's badly demon-scarred, I'm afraid. He doesn't like people looking on his deformity.
Is it true what they say? Do they kill Corlings in the Hollow? They say the Deliverers come there, bringing with them the battle wards of old.
Garrod here has killed dozens himself.
What I wouldn't give to have my spear warded to kill demons.
We've come to trade. You'll have your wish soon enough.
That what you got in the cart? Weapons?
As he spoke, a few other guards walked back to inspect the contents.
No weapons.
Just looks like warding books.
They're mine. I'm a warder.
I thought he said you was an herb gatherer.
I'm both.
The guard looked at her, then at Wanda, then shook his head.
Women warriors, women warders. They let them do anything out in the hamlets.
One of the guards had moved back to where the warded man sat atop Twilight Dancer. Much of the stallion's magnificent warded barding was hidden away, but the giant animal himself stood out, as did his cloaked rider. The guard moved in, trying to peek under the warded man's hood. The warded man obliged him, lifting his head slightly so a sliver of light could reach under the shadows of his cowl. The guard backed away, hurrying over to his superior, who was still speaking to Roger. He whispered in the lieutenant's ear as his eyes widened.
Clear the way! Let them pass!
He waved them through, and the gate opened, allowing them passage into the city.
I'm not sure if that went well or not.
What's done is done. Let's move quickly before word spreads.
They headed into the bustling city streets, boardwalk to prevent Corlings from finding a path to rise within the city's ward net. They had to dismount and lead the horses, which slowed things considerably, but it also allowed the warded man to virtually disappear between the horses and behind the cart. Still, their passage did not go unobserved.
We're being followed. One of the guards has been drifting along in our wake since we left the gate.
Roger looked back and caught a glimpse of a city guard's uniform just before the man ducked behind a vendor's stall.
What should we do?
Not much we can do. Just thought you should know.
Roger knew the maze-like streets of Angiers well and took them on a circuitous route through the most crowded areas to their destination, hoping to shake the pursuit. He kept glancing over his shoulder, pretending to look appreciatively at passing women or vendors' wares, but always the guard was there, just on the edge of sight.
We can't keep circling forever, Roger. Let's just get to Giselle's before it starts to get dark.
Roger nodded and turned the cart directly for Mistress Giselle's hospit, which quickly came in sight. It was a wide two-story building, made almost entirely of wood, as were all the buildings in Angiers. There was a small visitor's stable around the side.
Mistress Leisha?
Yes, it's me, Ronnie. Look how you've grown. Have you been keeping to your studies while I was gone?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Ronnie's eyes already flicked to Roger, and then drifted on to Garrod, where they lingered. Ronnie was a promising apprentice, but she was easily distracted, especially by men. 15 and full-flowered, she would already be married and raising children of her own if she had grown up in the hamlets. But women married later in the free cities, and Leisha was thankful for that.
Run and tell Mistress Giselle we've arrived. I didn't have time to write, and she may not have room for all of us.
Ronnie nodded and ran off, and before they were done brushing down the horses, a woman came out.
Leisha!
Leisha turned, only to find herself smothered against Mistress Giselle's prodigious bosom as the older woman swept her into a tight hug.
Oh.
Just shy of 60, Mistress Giselle was still strong and robust despite the heavy frame under her pocketed apron. A former apprentice of Bruna, much as Leisha was, Giselle had been running her hospit in Angiers for more than 20 years.
It's good to have you back.
It's good to be back.
And young Master Roger, it seems I owe you thrice. Once for escorting Leisha home, and twice more for bringing her back.
It was nothing. I owe you both more than I can repay.
You can help work that off by playing your fiddle for the patients tonight.
We don't want to put you out if there's no room. We can stay at an inn.
The Corps, you can! You'll all stay with us, and that's final. We have a great...